We're looking at this Ecclesiastes story, and it is kind of crazy. And, there's this this guy named Solomon who's just on this incredible pursuit to find meaning, and nothing is going to get in his way. And he doesn't really care about the consequences. Reminds me of this farmer who was going down the road by his farm, and he went by the airport, and he noticed there was some flying classes. Well, it said the thrill of flying. So he popped in it because he thought, tomorrow's my wife's birthday, and this would be a great gift. And so he popped in, and he talked to the pilot, and he showed him the plane. It was this open cockpit plane, and he thought, this would be great to go flying over our farm and see it. And so he started dickering with the pilot to lower the price because it was pretty high. And the pilot didn't want to do it. And he thought, well, okay, I'll do it. But on one condition: if there is a scream or a word or anything said while we're flying, deal's off and it goes back to the original price. So the farmer agreed, and they showed up the next morning, he and his wife, to go on this birthday flight. And the pilot's thinking, I'm going to really scare these guys. I'm going to get back to my original price. So he is climbing, he is diving, he is doing loop-de-loops, he's rolling, and he's not hearing any sound. And he's going, this is incredible. So they're beginning to land, and he yells back at the farmer, you won. I can't believe I didn't hear any sound back there. And the farmer said, well, I almost hollered when my wife fell out back there, but I didn't want to lose the deal. And that is like Solomon here. This is a guy who, no matter what, he was going to get what he wanted, regardless of the results. And that's the kind of thing I think maybe is true that we can relate to as well. If there was a phrase that could really link us to this Old Testament passage, which really shows that time is really not that different between us and thousands of years ago when this was written, this little journal, it would be six little words: if it feels good, do it. I think that Solomon had to have coined that phrase: if it feels good, do it. And, I maybe not doesn't get expressed like that exactly today, but it's there. It's there by the people who compose our music and design our clothes and publish our magazines and direct our films and think up our commercials. So this brings us to this next section of Solomon's journal. That's what this is. It's a journal, which basically is just an up-to-date analysis of last week, which is this thing called horizontal living, living with what's right in front of you. Now remember, this was written by a man who had the highest office in the country at that time, king. His nation had been enjoying peace and prosperity for a long time now, for about 40 years. In fact, even his name is taken from the Hebrew word shalom. So this country was experiencing a great, great time, and it was just this desire to lay back, kind of like what Karen was saying, relax, just enjoy stuff for a while. And maybe instead of if it feels good, do it, it would be something more like enjoy life under the sun. Because that's the phrase he uses all the time, under the sun. This guy is looking behind every rock, behind every bush, under the sun, to find any kind of happiness out there without God having to be involved in it. Okay? It's got to be more to life than what he's experiencing. So he decides it's time to scratch a few itches. And these itches have been there a long time. So he begins in chapter 2, verse 1. And I didn't have the chapter read because it's so long. So if you have your Bibles, you can follow along. In 2, verse 1, he writes these words. He begins with, I thought in my heart. Starts the chapter that way. And normally you would just kind of read over that, not think twice about it. But if you just pause for a moment and just think of just that word, now I thought in my heart. Another version says, I said to myself. So here's this guy who's about to try something new. He's going to take another journey, and he begins basically by talking to himself. Doesn't talk to somebody older. Doesn't talk to somebody who's been there, more experienced. Doesn't get any advice. Doesn't, you know, look back and see how his father, David, had done things. Doesn't learn from history. Doesn't talk to God about it to get some perspective or some wisdom. He decides to talk to himself. In other words, he had already made up his mind, just like that guy in the plane, just like the farmer, about what he was going to do. And what began as fantasy in his life, in his mind, he now decides to shift into reality. And so he says, I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. So the sensuality of our times holds no candle to the time of Solomon. But before he even dives in, we can guess what he's going to say. We know what he's going to say on the other end. Last part of verse 1. But this also proved to be meaningless. So sex doesn't hold him for long. And in verse 2, he's right out of the chute, off on another tangent. Laughter. He's going to laugh his way through life. Comedians, one-liners, clowns, comedy, sitcoms, jokes. Just bring on the fun and games and let's live it up. It feels good to laugh. It feels good to have a great time, so let's do this. But that didn't last. Look at verse 2. Laughter, I said, is foolishness. And what does pleasure accomplish? You know, Jerry Lewis used to have a little sign hanging in his dressing room. And it said, there are three things that are real: God, human folly, and laughter. Since the first two are beyond our comprehension, we must do what we can with the third. Does laughing it up and party hardy, does that last? Last for a night? Last for a time? You know, this man, he woke up, he was really melancholy every morning. Went to bed depressed every night, couldn't find relief for all the anxiety that was consuming him. He was desperate, decided to go to a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist listened to him for an hour and finally leaned toward him and said, you know, I read about this great show in town. And I guess there's this clown in it who's just crazy. He's leaving them in the aisles. He's gotten incredible, you know, reviews from the critics. Maybe he's the one who'll bring you your happiness back. Why don't you go to the theater and just have a good laugh? And with this depressed look on his face, the man answered, Doctor, I am that clown. You know, it really doesn't matter if you're Jay Leno or David Letterman or Jerry Seinfeld. Everybody has got to turn the light out at the end of the day. And the question is, do you have a sense of peace and contentment in there? So Solomon says, you know, if it's not having a good time, then maybe the satisfaction I'm looking for is in a bottle. Verse 3. I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. So Solomon here isn't like some guy, some stumbling drunk through the back door of a rescue mission guy. He's not saying, hey, I think I'm just going to go out and get bombed and see how that works. Solomon is a sophisticated, wealthy, brilliant person. But he's just on this search to find something, anything, to fill this void. But once again, this is something that fails. And a lot of his fantasies have just turned into bad dreams for this guy. But he decides to try another one. Work. Maybe the answer is in hard work. But you know, even though hard work is good, sometimes the line is blurred between a workaholic and an alcoholic. Here, I'll prove that. Notice how many times he uses the word I or my in this next section of his journal. Verse 4, I undertook great projects. I built homes and planted vineyards. Verse 5, I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees. Verse 6, I made reservoirs to water groves of trees. Verse 7, I bought male and female slaves. I owned more herds and flocks than anyone. Verse 8, I amassed silver and gold. I acquired men and women singers and a harem. Verse 9, I became greater by far than anybody in Jerusalem. Verse 10, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. This is the original workaholic. Architecture, horticulture, agriculture. He's surrounded by his own forest. Personally designed gardens, vineyards, trees, the smell of flowers, the sound of flowing water, slaves to wait on him. But he still couldn't find any peace. I mean, what could you possibly turn to next? What could you do for an encore? Got to keep trying. Got to keep hoping. Got to keep lying to yourself. Today, I think a lot of people have completely run out of stuff. And they really don't know where to turn to next. All this stuff. The party animal, the incredible accomplishments, and he still never felt more bored, frustrated, empty. So what would you call this? I wouldn't call it heaven. E. Stanley Jones writes about this fictional person, and he lived this fantasy life, and all he had to do was think of it, and poof, it would happen. He leaned back, and he imagines a mansion, and poof, there's 15-bedroom mansion with servants. Mansion needs nice cars in the driveway, so he closes his eyes and imagines a bunch of cars, and poof, they appear. Imagines a sumptuous meal, and poof, there it is. Everything and anything he wanted, and all he had to do was just imagine it, and it was his. And after a while, he grows incredibly bored, incredibly frustrated, feels the futility of all this. He wants to get out, but doesn't know how, and he can stop it all. And finally, after more and more and more of it, he says to one of his servants, "Sometimes I think I'd rather be in hell than be here." To which his servant replied, "Well, where do you think you are?" I mean, couldn't hell be a place filled with just boredom? You can get whatever you want, anything to make you happy. The problem is that you're soon running out of things, and all you can do is just ask for them again and again and again, and you glutton yourselves on all these things. You don't have any other option but to keep asking for more until you're just nauseated, and all you can do is just keep asking and asking and asking, and just the sheer boredom of all of that is just excruciating. It's hell. People make a good hell on earth right now, pursuing all this stuff that's supposed to make them happy people. It's futile. I think most of us probably have better sight than insight. Nothing wrong with our vision, I don't think. It's our perspective. That's what throws us the curse. We see the obvious, but we overlook the significant. We see what's on the surface, but we fail to pick up on what's going on deep down inside. And so knowing this, we become really good at acting. We know nobody can really see deep down inside of us, so we fake this outward image. Lots of people look really stable. But deep down, there can be a lot of frustration. Frustration comes from a Latin word which means in vain. In other words, a person who is frustrated feels like all they do doesn't have a purpose. And so Solomon just keeps driving along. He doesn't know what else to do. He just keeps finding more and more miles of bad roads. And he makes two final comparisons here in chapter 2. The first one in verse 12. "Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and madness and folly." So which one would be better? Should he be a serious thinker and really use his head, be an intellectual, or just blow the lid off of life and let it all hang out? It was up to him whatever he wanted to do, whatever he chose he could do. But look at verse 13. "I saw that wisdom is better than folly." But look at the end of verse 14. "But I came to realize the same fate overtakes them both." The end of verse 15. "So I said in my heart, this too is meaningless." So it hits Solomon that in the final analysis, both wise people and foolish people get the same fate. They die. So what if I get a good education, an MBA from Harvard, a good job, a lot of good common sense, a good family, a great 401k? The fact is, the axe is going to fall on my neck just like it's going to fall on the neck of the foolish guy. We're both going to die. So what's the use of it? What's the meaning of doing all that? And then the second thing he compares is verse 18 and 19. "I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the work into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless." Get the picture? Work, 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 think, compete, strategize, plan, sacrifice, worry, skip vacations, more hours, more responsibility, scratch the right back, invest, save, risk, work, 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 and then bam, it's over. David Barnhart was president of a rapidly growing company, Eagle Computers, and it had a small beginning, but it grew incredibly fast, and at 44 years of age, he was a multimillionaire. And then for some weird reason, when he was in his red Ferrari only blocks from the company, he drove his car through 20 feet of guardrail into a ravine and he died. And the LA Times wrote this. This is all it said. It had been the best days for Barnhart and the thriving young company which makes small business computers. His ownership of 592,000 shares was worth more than $9 million. Then at 4:30 on Wednesday afternoon, he died in an auto accident. Period. The end. So what's our kingdom? What's our plans for the future? What keeps us going? What's our dreams? And you know what's ironic is that what Solomon worried about, it actually happened. After four decades of peace, Solomon hands the kingdom over to his son Rehoboam, and in less than a year, the country is plunged into war. Egypt comes marching in, and Rehoboam goes into Solomon's temple, takes the solid gold shields, hands them over to the Egyptians to keep them from invading. It was all a joke. 40 years. So let's wrap it up. What do I do? What do I do when there's such emptiness in just trying to get out of stuff? Well, Solomon slowly puts the pieces together and he figures two things out. First, in verse 24, a man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. So he gets this flash of insight. There's nothing inherently in us that makes it possible for us to get enjoyment and purpose from the things we do. There's nothing within us that just automatically hands over happiness, just gives us peace. It just brings us joy. John D. Rockefeller's biographer wrote that Rockefeller had an income, get this, of $1 million a week toward the end of his life. But his doctors only allowed him to eat a bare minimum. He lived off a diet a person on welfare would have hated. A drop of coffee, a spoonful of cereal, a forkful of egg, and a piece of bacon the size of a pea. Here he is, richest guy in the world, and he couldn't even enjoy his food. And Solomon's second flash of insight is verse 25. He writes, "For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment?" Who's him? For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? See, he puts these two things together and he figures out something basic to all of life. Solomon, people call him the wisest man of all time, finally figures it out. Unless God is in the middle of it, lasting enjoyment is impossible. We have the idea that the world is the one that gives us enjoyment and God is the one who's always clubbing us over the head, you know? But it's the other way around. According to Solomon, who can have enjoyment without him? If we don't have the living God in the right perspective, if he's not in the nucleus of our plans, then we're facing endless miles of bad road. If we remove God, we remove anything eternal connected with this life, and we're left with 30, 40 years of work and put us in the box. Done. When you think about it, life gets to feeling like a greyhound race. You have these incredibly sleek dogs, and they're running around this track trying to catch this mechanical rabbit made of fur that they never get to. It's always just out of reach in front of them. There was an article a couple years ago about this race that occurred in Florida, and the gun went off, and the cage doors flew open, and the mechanical rabbit came out, started down the first stretch. But as the rabbit made the first turn, there was this electrical short in the system, and the rabbit just stopped, and boom, it blew up. And all that was left was some black stuff kind of smoking, hanging on this wire. And with the rabbit gone, you know what the dogs did? Some dogs just gave up. They stopped running. They laid down. Other dogs, they were still so worked up, they went charging right into a wall, broke their bones. Another dog began chasing his tail, and the rest of them just howled at the people in the stands. Thing is, not one dog finished the race. Now, I can just hear Jesus taking that story and turning that into a parable, couldn't you? People are chasing after their rabbit. We all need some reason for living, some reason for running the race. The question is, what if your goal, your purpose in life, that rabbit, is taken away? What if we find out that it was just mechanical? It wasn't real. What do we do then? Give up? Stop running? Run into a wall? Chase our tail? Or just howl at the government? At people? At our neighbor? That sounds just like Solomon's journal to me. And that's what Solomon finally figured out. Unless God is in the middle of it, lasting enjoyment is impossible. The Apostle Paul, he chased after his rabbit in life. And when that rabbit finally blew up, he was left with one simple truth. For me to live is Christ. So let it be for us today. Let's pray. Thank you for clarity and for listening to a person who has been there and back and is a willingness to write it down and to tell us, don't be stupid. Look at my life. Don't follow my pattern. But real life, real purpose can be had and experienced in a relationship with a living God. So we thank you for that and pray that this would encourage us, dear God, in this week to come. Amen.